Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes, Life Coaching with Deidre. I'm Deidre, your host, coming to you live on Inner Light Radio, broadcasting straight out of Richmond, California. Now, I know you could have listened to any of the thousands of podcasts on the radio, internet, or even satellite. So let me start off first for thanking you for picking mine. I am an organic therapist, personal mental trainer, self-esteem booster, good-hearted devil's advocate, relationships guru, archaeologist of the soul, and a boss, all rolled up into one, here to give you my perspective on life by guiding, deepening, and challenging your thoughts while influencing you with innovative, insightful information, not forgetting to motivate, provoke, and influence your actions while empowering, educating, and entertaining you. My show will be talking about life, dreams, relationships, love, happiness, health, wealth, fitness, careers, family, and everything else that goes along with all of that. Today, I want to continue our discussion on small money habits to pick up ASAP to prevent financial anxiety. Trump and his administration have made a lot of big promises to improve affordability since taking office. Those promises have ramped up as consumers increasingly feel pinched by the U.S. economy, from sticky inflation and a stagnant job market to high interest rates. The macroeconomic data proudly suggests that the economy is chugging along just fine, but there's been a growing mismatch between what the data shows and how average Americans feel about their finances. Many economists chalk this up to the U.S. increasingly operating as a K-shaped economy, one where the highest income Americans continue to see their income and wealth rise, while the less well-off face continued or growing financial strife. The fortunate few are propping up the economy with their spending, the argument goes, while middle and lower income Americans are falling further behind because of the cumulative impact of higher prices, weaker wage gains, fewer job markets, and more. In 2026, more than 60% of Americans report living paycheck to paycheck, including many households earning well above the national average. Rising interest rates, inflation, and higher housing costs have created financial pressure that affects people across income levels, not just those struggling to get by. The good news is this: living paycheck to paycheck doesn't mean you failed financially. It means the system has become more expensive, faster than most people can adjust. And before we start talking about solutions, it's important to understand the bigger picture. Many people living paycheck to paycheck today are doing everything right. They work full-time jobs. They pay their bills. They avoid luxury spending. They make their payments on their outstanding debts. But increased housing costs, rising insurance premiums, and aggressive credit card interest mean more of each paycheck is already spoken for before it even arrives. This isn't a budgeting failure. It's a structural reality, and it requires a smarter approach than just cutting back. Believe me, there are practical steps that we all can do to regain control of our money and prevent financial anxiety. So let's get informed by the best financial educator in the Bay Area. With over 18 years of expertise in the financial industry, Kendra is passionate about transforming lives through financial empowerment. Currently serving as senior marketing director, trainer, and team builder at World Financial Group, Inc., and World System Builder. She is on a mission to build and protect wealth for families, and we are blessed to hear from her every month. Ms. Willis, thanks for showing up again. You know I appreciate you. How you doing?
I am awesome. And you know, I appreciate you for calling on me about all things money. So I'm glad to be here. It's always a pleasure. I love being here and I love being able to share information that will hopefully empower and educate your guests.
And it does. My moms have definitely sent in some new tax questions. So let's tackle some of those first, as we do, since this is tax season. Can you tell us, how will anybody who has a side hustle, how are any side hustles affected by taxes?
So I always tell people, Deidre, that they need to think of their side hustle as a mini business, right? So you're technically taking that side hustle, and to you in your mind, you might be just thinking, oh, I'm just making a little extra change on the side. But the reality is you are running a business, queen or king. So any money you make is considered income, and the IRS wants to know about it. Uncle Sam wants to know about any extra penny you put in your wallet. And the reality is you may owe income tax and self-employment tax on that income. But the good news is that you can write off your side hustle expenses, the supplies, the gas and mileage that you're using in the vehicle, that get you from point A to point B to actually make your side hustle a thing. Part of your phone bill, a part of your home expenses, like the utility expenses, if you're doing the business out of a room at your house, or anything that's truly used to run that hustle. I don't care if it's a spoon and a fork that you had to buy or a bowl that you had to buy to whip up cake batter. You can write that off generally, right? The main thing though is that I encourage people to keep records, just simple notes or a folder or a binder. Put all the receipts, everything that's going into your business, every dollar that you're putting into the business, every dollar that's coming out of your wallet to make that hustle a business, you need to have record of that. Because when you keep track of everything that went out, just as much as you're keeping track of everything that's coming in, that's going to help lower what you owe. So don't get afraid thinking, oh my God, I sold some cakes, or I sold some mini pies at the festival. Am I going to owe a ton of money? No, because you had to drive to the festival. You had to get a tent. You had to get a table. You had to get a tablecloth. You had to, you know, buy the mix to make the pie, and you had to buy the oil, the flour, the sugar. So always keep track of what's coming out of your pocket just as much as you're keeping track of what's going into your pocket as it pertains to that business. And that'll help you a lot.
I heard that. So what, I know we talked about this, but I think that, you know, they feel like if they change the question around, you might give them some different information. So this one may be a review, but what can we do to lower any taxable income as much as possible, especially before you retire?
Well, I want to make sure that people understand what that means when they say, I want to lower taxable income. When you're saying, I want to lower taxable income, what you're essentially saying is, it's not just about, I don't want to pay Uncle Sam. You're essentially saying, I want to take in less money. So that's not always the best idea. The first thing when it comes to taxes is understanding how taxes work. The simplest way that I can tell you, or the simplest snapshot that I can give you of how taxes work is this. There are three places that you can put your money. And the minute you understand the bucket that, so think about three buckets, and I want you to think about three empty buckets, and you got to fill three of those empty buckets. The way you're going to know where your money is going is by looking at the buckets in three ways. There's tax now. Okay, tax now is money that you put in your checking account, your savings account. You buy some stocks. That stock earns money. That's your tax now bucket, because what happens is every dollar that you earn in that tax now bucket, you're going to have to pay tax on it. The second bucket is your tax later bucket. That tax later bucket are things like your traditional IRA, your 401k at work, your 403b, an annuity. When you are paying into these things, they are not going to tax you now, but they're going to tax you later when you use the money from that bucket. So you have your tax now bucket, you have your tax later bucket, and then you have your tax advantage bucket. In that tax advantage bucket, what they're simply saying is, if you pay the taxes on it up front, you won't have to pay tax on the gains later. So things like a college savings 529 plan, an HSA account, your health savings account, when I say HSA, retirement, like, no, I'm sorry, not retirement, an index universal life or a life insurance account, your Roth IRA. Once you put the money there, you've already paid tax on that money, so you won't have to pay tax on the gains of that money. So I want people to know that you're not necessarily thinking about how to reduce your income later on. You're thinking about how to reduce the taxable amount of your income, reduce and or eliminate it. So if you put your money in places where it's taxed advantage, as you get older and you start to pull from that money, you won't owe taxes on the money that's taxed advantage. But now if we think about it in a smaller way, and we do in a more simplified way, a simple way to think about it is this. The government is going to reward you for saving for your future. So if you wanted to just think about how can I lower my taxable income today? Well, you can put your money in a 401k. You can put your money in a 403b or a traditional IRA. That's going to reduce your taxable income now, right? Because you're putting it in a tax later bucket. So what you're doing is you're deferring the tax. You're going to have to pay tax on it when you get older. So if you're wanting to make sure that you don't have the big tax when you're older, then you want to think about putting your money in the tax advantage bucket. If you want to worry about reducing your taxable income now on the front end, then you want to put it in the tax later bucket, the IRA, 401k, 403b. You won't pay any tax up front. You'll pay it later. If you're 50 and older, you can put in extra catch-up contributions into those 401k, 403b, traditional IRAs. If you have a high deductible health plan, a health savings account, that HSA, that's a good tax-friendly option that's available, right? Because that is going into that tax advantage bucket, tax never. You're not going to have to pay tax later on. Another thing that could help you with lowering your taxable income as it pertains to filing taxes is you can have charitable giving. If you make a donation to your church or any charity, you're going to be lowering your taxable income per se. If you itemize deductions, you are potentially lowering your taxable incomes. And then the best part of all is being a business owner. So that's where you use that side hustle that you started to give you access to more deductions and more credits that may be available to you.
Okay, my phone has been blowing up with, wow, thank you. Wow, wow. Okay, didn't know that. Okay, well, thank you so much for that.
That was a lot. But it was a lot to hear. But I often sit down, we do one-on-one appointments, and I'll share my information later for those who may want to learn how to structure monies now so that they can make a decision where it's like, I don't have all my money in the tax now bucket, or I don't have all my money in the tax later bucket, or how do I take my money from tax now, tax later, and put it in tax advantage? Those are things that we teach in our workshops. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but we have daily financial literacy workshops Monday through Friday, 3 times a day happening on Zoom. And so we show you the 3 buckets, but if you just visualize three pails of water, and every time you decide where you're saving money, you want to decide if I'm saving tax now, tax later, or tax advantaged. That's how you decide.
Thank you. Now, if I do want to get more education regarding tax, where do we find tax laws? And are there any new tax laws that we should be aware of that, you know, sometimes we just don't keep up with stuff and people are looking at you like, girl, you should have been done knew that.
So I just want people to know that tax laws change almost every year. And this year we got the big, beautiful bill. So there were tax laws and things pertaining to tax in there. But let's talk about some of the changes that happened for 2026. 2026, a lot of the 2017 tax law expired. So people may want to check that out. There's so many to talk about. But a lot of families are going to see higher tax brackets and smaller deductions in the near future. I always tell people, you want to do your research. You need to know what's happening. And so the best place to look for current tax laws, you just go to the official government website like irs.gov. That's going to give you updated changes in federal law. And then you can look up Federal Register for new regulations and state specific agency websites. For us would be like California Franchise Tax Board, FTB.ca.gov. That's going to tell you what's happening for your for our state. But you want to look at your state's tax website to know what's going on with state specific laws. You can always just talk to your tax professional. Make sure if you're dealing with a tax professional, they understand the tax laws. They need to be in the know. If you have a financial advisor, if you're working with a financial professional, ask those questions. And then my biggest, I tell people all the time, if you are going to be on social media, because this is technically we're on the internet, but you want to make sure that whomever you're listening to on the internet has some sort of credential, right? We know that you are a life coach. They know that you are a life coach. You spend a lot of hours coaching people one-on-one. I am a financial professional. I am licensed. So don't just get your financial information from Sally and Susie. Those are your friends. And they may know a little bit, but I would still follow up and do my own research. And the easiest way to go about it is just hop right on that irs.gov and put in, you can put in the search bar, you can put in current 2026 tax laws, and it'll tell you what's to come on the federal level.
Good looking. Okay. All right. Let's get back to talking a little bit less about taxes and more about our households, because that's what, you know, we really are worried and concerned about as well. So one of the questions that, you know, I have, you know, parents, I mean, they're always telling me, hey, I have, again, I've stopped doing this. I'm no longer doing this. I've cut back. I've done things. Is it possible to cut cost without cutting every quality of life, I guess, is where they are going? It's just like when you can't cut anymore, what do we do?
First of all, I think you can definitely cut costs without cutting the quality of life. A lot of families are surprised where money leaks are quietly happening. You need to really sit down and take inventory. We do what's called a personal finance strategy. I know on your page, on your website, Coach Deidre, you also had like an area to help people budget. And I think people need to take advantage of those types of things. Very simple though. I'm old school. I'm a notebook and paper kind of girl, but I know there are other things like Rocket Money and different types of apps that are absolutely free in your app store that can help you with budgeting. First step is finding out what's really going out and what's really coming into your household. And I always tell people the simplest thing you can do is audit your subscriptions. A lot of people are paying for things that they forgot they signed up for. So really take inventory of your bank statement and see where the money's coming out at and for what. You don't have to have, and people think, I don't want to give up my quality of life. Listen, you don't have to have every subscription. A lot of people get the subscriptions because it's entertaining to the kids and it allows you to go and do some other things while the kids are watching whatever they're watching. But you don't have to have them all. You don't have to have Netflix, Hulu, Voodoo, Apple TV Plus, Disney. You know, there are tons of subscriptions. So monitor your subscriptions. Go and compare your insurance rates every 1 to 2 years. This alone can save hundreds of dollars. If you go and you look at how much am I paying in renter's insurance and can I do a comparison? How much am I paying in auto insurance? And what do some of the other companies have to offer me? Look at what you're being charged for. Maybe even increase your deductible on your auto insurance. That will save a little bit of money. If you're not accident prone or having a lot of accidents, sometimes it don't hurt to go from a $500 deductible to a $1,000 deductible. I had a client say to me, Coach Deidre, but what if I have an accident? Then I'm going to have a hard time coming up with $1,000. And I said to her, you're not going to have a hard time coming up with $1,000 if you can lower that auto insurance premium and start saving $100 a month into your emergency savings funds. So you just have to pay attention to where the money's going. Meal planning, that saves a lot of money without sacrificing enjoyment. Make cooking in the house with your kids or with your spouse fun. I think sometimes as moms, we look at those things like, oh my God, I'm already pooped and I'm already wiped out. But let me tell you, I have two daughters, ages 23 and 25. And what I learned was that when they were little, yes, I was tired. I was exhausted. But you know what I did? I would get them in the kitchen and let them put the food in the oven and let them put the food in the crock pot. It may not have been the best work, but I was training them so that by the time they were 14 and 16 and I really didn't want to cook, they already knew the drill. They already knew how to go in there and season up a piece of something, throw it in the crock pot or put it in the oven. And we made it fun. We made it a family thing. Start working on paying off your high interest debt. That's also going to improve your monthly cash flow. Automate savings so it feels effortless rather than restrictive. So the question, is it possible to cut costs without cutting your quality of life? Yes, but you have to really do a deep dive into where that money is going. And you have to really do a deep dive into what are the things that you absolutely don't have to have. And also, what are the things that are just, for me, there were some things that were just non-negotiable. I gotta have my nails done every now and then. I was able to space it out a little bit more than what I used to do. So you don't have to cut it everything completely, but you just have to pay attention to how often you're doing some of the things that you're doing, and also do a deep dive into where the money is really going.
I like that. One, I love that you're talking about, like, yes, we can space some of our, luxury spending, you know, our pedicures and our manicures and our hair. We can space that out. That's a really great idea. I love that. Again, got my phone blowing up on just that part alone, by saying, like, you know what, that makes sense, because we're so in a habit sometimes of thinking that since we have to do this, as they say, every 2 weeks, that, you know, we are thinking that we're budgeting for every 2 weeks instead of thinking that, you know what, if I do it once a month, I'll still be okay. You know
absolutely
what I mean? That
absolutely.
That type of stuff.
So, and that saves a lot of money. I used to be an every 2 week mani-pedi girl myself, and it wasn't about my not having the money to do it. Let me just say this. We've got to get out of the mindset of not doing something because we can't. What happens is you'll end up not being able to do it. If you stop doing some things, even when you can, what happens is you'll never have to give up a whole lot of stuff. So for me, I don't think of things in the mindset of scarcity. I will skip a couple weeks of getting my nails done, not because I don't have the money, but because my nails still look okay, you know, and even when they don't look that great, I'm looking at my schedule to say, okay, where am I going to be at this week? Are most of my meetings on Zoom? Am I doing podcasts on Zoom? Because if so, if I don't have to see a whole lot of people, my nails don't have to be fabulous. It can be, you know, they can be not their best, and it's okay. Like, we got to get in the mindset of doing the things that we should be doing, because we are working on saving, growing, and protecting our finances, as opposed to worrying about what everybody else thinks, or as opposed to just being in the habit of mindlessly doing things, or putting ourselves in the situation where we wait until we absolutely can't afford. If you were just saving a little bit and already going a couple weeks in between those appointments, guess what? You never never get in a situation where you can't do it. You can always do it because you've been saving along the way. So a lot of us will allow our finances to run down to zero and then start thinking about what can I give up? Think about what you can give up even when you have all the things, because none of us needs another thing. We just like to spend money and do more. But it's okay to scale back for no reason other than you are looking out for your financial future. I scale back just because I want to, because I know what the bigger picture is. I'm not scaling back because I don't have the money. I'm scaling back because I want to have some money later on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, girl, it makes perfect sense. Okay? That makes perfect sense. Thank you, Queen. I love that whole thing. Ain't no need in even messing with that. Let's talk about people that are considering bankruptcy. Because I don't know why that has been coming up. I've had a couple of people that are bringing it up. And then once the conversation gets brought up, it just goes everywhere where, you know, now people tell me, girl, when I did it, this happened. When I did it, this happened. So if somebody is considering bankruptcy, what's the pros, cons, and when should I determine that this is a good choice for me? It may not be your only choice, but it's a good one. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, let me just say this. I started helping people with the bankruptcy process about 24 years ago. So I've prepared bankruptcies as a bankruptcy petition preparer for 24 years. And I kind of stumbled into that area. I was already in the financial services industry, but I just stumbled into that and I started doing more research and getting certified and all those good things. And here's what I know about a lot of I want to say people in inner city communities, urban areas, we've been taught that bankruptcy is a negative thing. And the reality is bankruptcy is like hitting a financial reset button when things have gone far beyond what you can realistically pay back. Now, I'm going to say something that may strike a nerve with some listeners, but our current president has filed bankruptcy multiple times in his past. Mm-hmm. So if it's okay for the upper class, if it's okay for the rich and the wealthy, why is it such a negative, or there's a negative connotation associated with it for regular people who work regular 40-hour week jobs or who are just trying to get by? So when should you consider it? You should consider it when you can't keep up with your minimum payments. You should consider it when debts keep going up, growing despite your efforts. Like, you've been paying the minimum on something for 12 years and the balance is more than what you started out with 13 years ago. You're choosing between paying bills and buying groceries. When you get to the point where you can't pay your basic necessities, your basic living expenses, bankruptcy can be a consideration. You should consider it when creditors are calling nonstop or wages are being garnished. You might need to consider it. What are the pros of bankruptcy? So there are multiple types of bankruptcy, but let's just talk about the two main kinds real quick. I'll give it to you in a nutshell. Chapter 7 bankruptcy, we call that the total liquidation bankruptcy. With a Chapter 7, you're able to wipe out your unsecured debt. So when we talk about unsecured debt, we're talking about medical bills, credit cards, personal loans, potentially private student loans. And then there's Chapter 13, which we call the reorganization bankruptcy or the payment plan bankruptcy. That's generally for someone who has enough income to pay their bills, but they just got a little bit sidetracked. And so they make a repayment plan with the court. Generally, that's used for somebody who may have a mortgage, high monthly mortgage payments. They just need a little bit of coaching to reestablish their and reorganize their debt. And so that particular bankruptcy is going to last 3 to 5 years. When it comes to the Chapter 7, total liquidation, wiping out all of your unsecured debt, that you're only in bankruptcy for 3 to 4 months. And the pros of it is you're going to stop those collections immediately, because generally when you go into a 7 or a 13, you have what's called an automatic stay. That automatic stay, in a nutshell, prohibits your creditors from trying to collect from you. So right off the cuff, your creditors cannot collect from you. You'll be able to wipe out a large amount of debt that you may not have been able to get from under. It'll give you breathing room to rebuild. It'll give you the wiggle room to sit back, re-strategize, start fresh, pause. Let me just start this thing over. And then the cons, because there's always a con, right? Nothing is just 100% without the flip side. Your credit score is going to drop for a while. It just is what it is. You may lose certain assets depending on the type of bankruptcy. So if you go into a chapter 7 and you cannot exempt, you can't exempt it from the bankruptcy. If you can't exempt all your assets, or you have too much equity in your home, you could lose that asset. And it becomes part of your financial record for years. Okay. So it's on your credit report. Chapter 7 is on your credit report up to 10 years. Chapter 13 is on your credit report, up to 7 years. So it is an option. I just don't want people to, I like to tell both sides, Coach Deidre, and I don't want anybody who has had to do it or felt like they were backed against the wall and needed to do it, or even if they were considering doing it, do your research, get with someone who actually can help you with it, and know your options. You always want to know the options and benefits to anything that you're going to sign your name on the dotted line for anything that's going to affect how you're able to save, grow, and protect your money in the future.
Now, you had mentioned with bankruptcy that it will drop your credit score. Mm-hmm. So if somebody does choose bankruptcy, is it necessary for them to repair their credit score? Or do you, since it's, you know, you're going to be on there for a specific amount of time, the hell with it? You know what I mean? Like, what steps do you do or not do?
So if you're going, let's just say simple bankruptcy, chapter 7, you don't own a home, or you do own a home and you don't have millions of dollars in equity in the home. Some people will own a home and they may have $200,000-$400,000 in equity in that home. But guess what? They can't get a loan because their credit is tanked, because the credit card debt has been eating them alive. And they've been trying to make those minimum payments. And a lot of people don't realize that your credit score is not just derived from your on-time payments, but your debt to income ratio matters too. So if you've been making all your payments on time for 4 years in a row, but you've only been paying the minimum balance, your debt to income ratio is out of whack and you can't get a loan. And so when you file that bankruptcy, no, there's no need to repair your credit, because that chapter 7, you're going to be in the bankruptcy for, let's say you own a house, you have some equity in the house, you tell the bankruptcy court, I want to exempt the equity that I have, meaning I want to keep it. I want to keep my home. I want to keep my car. But you can take all of these credit cards, you can take all of these medical bills, and you can shove them. I'm done with them. Those things are going to wipe out. So there's no need to repair your credit, because it's wiping out in the bankruptcy. However, once that bankruptcy is done in 4 months, now it's time to start to rebuild. And a lot of people don't realize you're able to rebuild faster than you expect, because guess what creditors know? You just filed a bankruptcy. It's public record. And guess what creditors want? They want you in debt again. So the same creditors that you just got rid of, they are back knocking on your door and saying, hey, would you like another credit card? So you're able to rebuild. But what I will say, when it comes to repairing your credit, here are some good steps that you can start taking. Step 1, pay all your current bills on time. Bingo. That's it. If you're paying all your current bills on time, your payment history is what matters the most in your credit report. Get yourself a small secured credit card and use it for your groceries and your gas, but do not use more than you can pay off monthly. Make sure if you're going to use $300 for groceries and gas, you better be paying off $300 when that credit card statement comes in. Make sure you're paying it off. Keep all your balances low. Avoid new debt unless it's planned and necessary. Don't go out and start doing Affirm and Klarna and all these things because you wanted something on Amazon. A lot of people's debt is unnecessary. I hate to break that news to the listeners, but a lot of you can attest to the fact you're not in debt because of your mortgage. You're not in debt because you went out and you got a simple Honda and, you know, a little car note. No, you're in debt because you got a car you couldn't afford. You're in debt because you like to shop on Amazon without having the money to shop on Amazon. And so you open up a buy now, pay later account. You're in debt because your kids want the newest shoes. You're in debt because the baby needed a new PS5 or PS95, whatever number they're on now. A lot of our debt is consumer debt with things that we didn't need to begin with. So if you utilize a bankruptcy to get you out of that, don't get yourself back in. And when you come out of that bankruptcy, just pay your bills and don't get any new unnecessary debt. And within 12 to 24 months, you are going to see major improvements, may be able to even get out there and buy a house.
I wish that there was some type of mandatory classes that you would have to take, you know, if you did have to file for bankruptcy, because just because I file for bankruptcy doesn't mean that I've changed my mindset or my spending habits.
No, guess what? There you is a class. I mean? No. You have to take a class.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. You have to take two classes. You have to take a pre-filing credit counseling course before you even start the bankruptcy. So you have to get a certificate. It's called a debtor's education certificate. And you have to prove to the bankruptcy court that you sat down online, of course. You do an online course. You are going to have to list all your debt. You are going to have to meet with a debt counselor. So that debt counselor is going to talk to you about how not to get into this type of situation again. So that's your debtor's education filing course. And then before the bankruptcy discharges, three months later, you are going to have to take a post-filing debtor's education course. So you have to take another course in order to discharge from that bankruptcy. So yes, they have that in place now. You have to have two classes in order to file a Chapter 7 or Chapter 13 bankruptcy.
Well, all right now. I walked right into that one. They had no idea.
You sure did.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. I love that. Can you tell us now, what's the difference between bankruptcy and debt settlement?
Yes. So now I also work with a debt settlement company. So we've added debt settlement to our plate about 3 years ago. I work with one of the leading debt settlement companies in the nation, and our team specifically has been able to help hundreds of people to do debt settlement. So debt settlement is a little bit different than a bankruptcy. Remember, I said the bankruptcy is going to wipe everything out. Possibly Chapter 7 would wipe everything out. That's unsecured. Chapter 13, you're doing a repayment plan that's happening through the courts. So now the courts are monitoring your money and who you're paying and how you're paying. And you have an approved payment plan for 3 to 5 years. With a debt settlement company, what a lot of people don't realize is that the government has allotted your collectors, your creditors, to be able to write off X amount of millions of dollars worth of bad debt every year. And so with debt settlement, it is not going through the courts. There is a company, a specialist. So what we do is we partner you with our settlement company. We're going to partner you with a specialist, and that specialist is going to negotiate with your creditors to pay less than what you owe. The government allots for these companies to settle with you and to not give you necessarily a negative connotation on your credit report. They are going to freeze your principal, lower, possibly even reduce your principal, and they are also going to completely eliminate the majority of the interest. So we've been able to help people. Let's say I sit down with Sally. Sally, on day one, our specialist is going to pull her credit. They're going to do a soft pull, does not hurt their credit. And that specialist is going to say to Sally, hey, Sally, I'm noticing you have $100,000 worth of debt. They're going to go over all the debt, all of the creditors, who they are, how much she owes, and everything that's unsecured. We are generally able to work out an agreement with that creditor, because the creditor, they already know how much they can write off. They already know that they don't have to hassle you for all of the interest. They're going to stop that principal right where it's at. They're going to reduce and eliminate that principal. And that $100,000 worth of debt can be turned into $40,000 worth of debt. So I've had clients who we have cut their debt amount down by 50-60%, which also cuts your monthly payments down by 50-60%. Now, they're not going to consolidate it and give you a loan. What they're going to do is they're going to open another bank account for you, and every month you're going to be putting into that bank account, and as you're putting into that bank account, they're going to be paying each of the settled debts off based on the agreement that they have. As they're paying, but in the interim, everything is frozen. Nope, the principal's not moving, and there's no interest. And so every month, as they're paying a debt off, you're going to be getting a notification, or they're going to notify the three credit bureaus that you've made those payments, that you settled as agreed, and that you did do what you were supposed to do. So you don't have to worry about that negative connotation on your credit report for 7 or 10 years. Most of the time, the creditors are going to agree. So it may hurt your credit in the very beginning, because you are going to get those collection calls those first couple of months. So it's going to take a little bit longer than the 3.5 months. Actually, it takes between 1 and 4 years to have all of your debts paid off, to have you completely debt free. But with that settlement, you are stopping the debt where it's at. You're reducing and eliminating the principal. You're reducing and eliminating the interest. And you are still able to go on with life. You are still able to open new accounts if you should choose to. Some of the accounts will allow you to pay them off and still hold on to them. So it's, although it is, it could be a lengthier process. Bankruptcy is more structured because it's directly through the courts, but the debt settlement is a negotiation, and it's still going to allow you to keep that good credit report, to rebuild faster, and to not have to worry about having the government per se in your business.
Got you. Okay. Thank you. That was some really good points you made there. So I know we've been talking about the people who are doing right and the people who are doing their thing. Any other last words of advice that you can give to anybody that can stop them, that, hey, I've done my cutbacks. I've, you know, tweaked as much as I possibly can. I'm down to the skin and bones, but I'm still living good. You know, I'm happy where I'm at, but that doesn't make me feel good. You know what I mean? I'm not feeling good about my finances. Still feel anxious, even though I have barely enough to pay. Any last words you can tell these queens?
So basically, what you're explaining is most of middle American families right now. Hmm. I mean, the economy has gone cuckoo. The cost of living has risen through the roof. Inflation is really a thing. I mean, everything you paid $3 for last year cost $7 this year, right? Gas is not down like they say it is. Down as in comparison to what? Cereal's crazy. Fruits and veggies are insanely high. So you're explaining, or you're talking about a lot of families. So this is common. And I tell the people that I sit with, probably on Zoom and in person, 10 to 12 people a day. And I say, first, you have to understand that your anxiety doesn't always mean you're doing something wrong. It often just means you don't have clarity. That's what the anxiety is coming from. It's not because you're doing something wrong. It's because you don't have clarity about what you are doing. And that's where that personal finance strategy comes in at. That's where us developing a holistic approach to your individual financial situation comes in at. A written plan, you gotta see it. You gotta have it on paper somewhere, or have it on your desktop, or have it in your phone. A written plan is going to give you confidence. Knowing where your money goes and what your goals are is going to replace that anxiety with control. See, a lot of people are anxious and feeling away because they feel like they've lost control over their paycheck. They're not controlling the paycheck. The paycheck is controlling them. Friday comes along and you're nervous. You don't even want to look at it because you know you owe this company, this collector, that collector. But when you sit down and you're able to map out, okay, this is where I am. Mm-hmm. This is what it looks like. You need to just face it head on. This is where I am. This is what it looks like. And this is where I want to be. How do I get there? What's the roadmap to get me from point A to point Z? I tell people all the time, can you imagine? I don't even know how we did it, Coach Deidre. How did we get in the car 20 years ago with a map and just go? we opened up that big old map and we just went. I remember driving cross country with my husband, who was then my boyfriend, like 27, 28 years ago. And we would print out directions. Mm. And we would have MapQuest, and we'd be printing out directions. We'd have 20 pieces of paper. Turn right when you see the fork in the road.
Yes.
So that's what people are doing with their finances. They've got 100 pieces of paper. They've got stuff everywhere. They've got all the bills lined up on the table. And that's where the anxiety comes. If you start working on learning how to save, grow, and protect your money, if you have a holistic financial plan in place, even if you're not saving hardly anything. I have a team of agents connected to me, and I had my team save 50 cents a day. They were like, are you crazy? Why are we saving 50 cents? That's not. And I said, it's the practice. Mm-hmm. You are practicing how to save money. Most of y'all don't have nothing saved. Save that 50 cents. And so what would happen is they first started saving and they were like, this is easy. This is easy. This is easy. And then I upped it to $1 a day. And then so the dollar a day started getting hard because they were like, oh my God, I got to go and somehow get a dollar and put the dollar in them. We were just putting it in a jar, and it was not a whole lot. It was $30 a month. But it was putting them in the mind frame of learning how to save something, because saving something is better than saving nothing. But also it was forcing discipline on them. And so then we went from $1 to $2 a day. And then we went from $2 to $3 a day. And then after they got the $3 a day, we started doing monthly, just put $50 up every month. And we did that. And when we got to that next year and they had couple thousand dollars saved up, they were shocked and amazed. It wasn't big changes. It was small changes. Learn how to build an emergency fund. That was their emergency fund. They didn't know that 50 cents that I had been putting in was going to be able to save them one day. And one of my team members, her car went on flat, and she walked outside in the morning, tire was flat. And you know what she said? Oh, I got a jar. I got a jar with 2,000 some odd dollars in it. And so she was able to pay. She called somebody and they came over and she was able to pay on site. So start small, build a small emergency fund. Even $1,000 can reduce stress. Just knowing you got an extra $1,000. Automate your retirement savings so you're not constantly worrying if you're doing enough. You may not be doing enough now, but if you're in the habit of doing it, you can grow that and add to it later. Stop being scared to talk to a financial professional who understands real family budgets, not just wealthy clients. My clients are middle Americans. I don't have a lot of wealthy. I deal with mamas. I deal with, you know, people that are meeting with me with crying babies on their lap and spilling coffee on the way to the gym. And we're having a Zoom meeting. You know, those are my clients, real people with real budgets, real people who are barely getting by. And then the last thing I say is give yourself grace. Raising kids, caring for parents, managing money, trying to build a business, trying to work a 9-to-5 for somebody else's, their dream, looking at your paycheck, not knowing what should go where. Give yourself grace. You're not failing. You're just juggling, but you can master the juggle. You know what I mean? You can be good at the thing, but it takes practice. And sometimes it takes you building a village. And inside of that village should be people like Coach Deidre who can talk you through some of that anxiety that you're having about daycare and the baby and this and that. And then also talk to a financial professional like me, somebody who's going to sit down with you, not charge you anything, and just help you walk through what your financial goals are, and then just map it out for you so that now you've got a navigation system to help you get from this place to that place and you feel good about it and not stressed out about it.
Yeah, you said a couple of things I just want to piggyback on real quick. And one of them was when, you know, when we were talking about clarity, and I'm always telling, you know, my clients and my groups that clarity is power. And sometimes when we have that anxiety, it's just because we have lost the clarity. And I know you had mentioned and called it mapping it out. I just call it self-reflection, because sometimes when you have done the right things, it's just like you're not satisfied. You still feel like there's more that you can do instead of, just like you said, giving yourself grace about what you got on your plate and what you are doing.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes you trust yourself by trusting your process.
That's right.
I can't
right.
do nothing until I get another paycheck anyway. So if I did the right thing with my last paycheck, then I need to, as you say, give myself grace. I need
That's
to make
right.
sure that I am juggling without dropping anything, but also remembering how many things I got up in the air. Also remembering what I am doing right. Also remembering, you know, all these things that, you know, are making the difference in how I am not where I used to be. I am now currently where I am right now and the steps that it has taken me to even get there. So I love
Absolutely.
That you brought that up.
Absolutely. And let me say one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I tell moms all the time, you can juggle and drop.
Mm-hmm.
You can drop it, honey. Let it go. I tell people all the time, you can lay down. Just don't stay down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Every now and then, it's okay to say, you know what? I am taking a day for me. I'm letting this go. I'm not looking at the laundry. You know what I mean? Everybody's eating corn dogs. I don't care where the hot dog in the middle came from. I don't even care. Today, y'all eating pork.
Yes. You said today.
You will live. I had to tell my brother, you want to do everything so perfectly. Guess what? Those kids will live. Give them some french fries and some apples. That's dinner today. They will be okay if for one day you drop the ball. I think we live in a society where everything has to be perfect, and we're worried about who's watching, and we're worried about what the other moms are thinking and who feels what about what we're doing. And I tell people all the time, now, you know, I'm in the financial industry. And a part of being in the financial industry is offering life insurance products. And one of the things I tell my clients is, I promise you, nobody's climbing in that casket with you. Stop worrying about how they feel. Because on the day you die, I don't care how much they love you, they are not getting in the casket. Scoot on over. Let me get in next to you. You're going to die by yourself. So stop allowing others to judge you and hold you to this crazy high standard that they're not even holding themselves to.
Amen.
You'll be all right.
and you said something else, which is, again, and I'm always encouraging, you know, especially, you know, my moms, but, you know, and my parenting groups, is to have a whole wellness team. Just like you said,
That's right.
you need a life coach. You need a financial coach. Everybody has their specialty. Right?
That's right.
I know a little bit about some money only because I talk to and listen to you all the time, and we've been doing this for so long, but I'm not a money educator, right?
Right.
So I'm going to encourage you to have all these different people on your team, because when you do, and again, all of them are giving you the tools that you need and you're using those tools, that knocks out any anxiety. Right?
Absolutely.
The right tools in the right time to do what it is that you need. And I'm always talking to parents about, if you are worried about what people are thinking, you got the wrong people in your circle.
That's right.
Because the people that are in your circle don't judge you.
That's right.
Like, you know, I'm always hearing people, I got to keep my house clean. Girl, why is one of your friends going to come over and criticize your house? Because that's not a good friend.
That's right.
I know if somebody come over and see my house and mess the first day, they're probably going to be like, D, what's wrong? Because they're going to be thinking like, this is not normal. But they're not going to judge me. They're going to try to help me.
That's
so
right.
So we're thinking about what people are thinking about, especially when it comes to my money, what I'm doing with my money, how I'm spending my time and my kids and doing all that. I got the wrong people in my circle because everybody else would know my circumstances. And again, they not only would be giving me grace, but they would be giving me support. Right.
That's right.
And sometimes that support can be nothing but words and encouragement. So I'm glad that you brought all that up because that sounds just like me on all that. Now, I have an insurance question that I do want to ask that has been burning some of these some of my moms up because their thing is just like, and I'm wondering if we may have to pick it up again the next time that we talk, because we want our insurance to get from, having just enough to bury somebody to having enough to level up my family after you buried me. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
How do we, that's what our parents, that's what the parents want to do. How can they get their kids in that situation? Is there a specific insurance, the type of insurance that they should be getting so that they can help their kids level up?
So the well, let me ask you this. Are we talking about putting the insurance on the parent or putting the insurance on the child?
The parent.
So here's a way for a parent to make sure they have more than enough. We call this the dime method. I want you, everybody that's listening, if you want to know how do I make sure I have more than enough insurance, sit down, write out the word dime, D-I-M-E. Next to the D, put debt. Next to the I, put income. Next to the M, put mortgage. If you don't have a mortgage, just put R for rent. Okay. And then E is education. And then I want you to do this. I want you to go and figure out exactly how much debt you have. You know, you need that amount of money in insurance. You need that amount of coverage. So if I have 50,000 in debt, I'm going to put 50,000 next to the D. Income. I want you to put your income times 10. If you make 50,000, 50,000 times 10 is 500,000. For your mortgage, let's say you owe 500,000 on your mortgage. I want you to list that 500,000 you owe on your mortgage. If you rent, I want you to take the amount of money you pay per year in your rent and I want you to multiply that by 10. Okay. And if you have small children and you want to make sure they go to college, I want you to go on the internet and I want you to look at the college that you dream your baby would go to. If you dream your baby's going to go to Harvard, if you dream your baby's going to go to Morehouse or Spelman or UCLA, I want you to see exactly how much that college costs. And I want you to multiply that by 4. And then I want you to do the same for every kid that you have. I want you to total up all those things, your debt, your income times 10, your mortgage or your rent times 10, and the education amount that you want to have saved up for each kid for 4 years. Okay. And I want you to total all those things up. And that's exactly how much insurance you need to have. And then once you have that amount of insurance, if you add an extra $100,000 or $200,000 to it, you're going to have more than enough. Because what that means is moms, dads, in the event of your demise today, guess what? Your kids are not going to have to worry about your debt. Your kids are still going to have your income for the next 10 years. Your kids are going to be able to pay off that house because your mortgage is factored into that amount, the balance of your mortgage. If you don't have a mortgage, guess what? They'll be able to afford rent for 10 years. Their education is definitely paid for. And then you throw an extra $200,000 on that, your kids are living rent-free, your kids are living debt-free, your kids have enough money in the income to buy their groceries, to pay their utilities, their education is paid for, and they still have some money in their pocket. That's how you know how much coverage you need to make your kids wealthy. The dime method. Debt, income, mortgage balance, income, debt, income times 10, mortgage balance, educational expenses, throw a couple $100,000 in there and your kids will be just fine.
Girlfriend, I love that. You put that in a nutshell for us real quick. I love that. I love it. I love it. Hey, we got to get out of here. It's almost time for us to start enjoying our weekend. Real quick, tell everybody how they can get in contact with you and then we're going to be enjoying this Friday.
You can find me on Facebook because I am Gen X and I'm on Facebook. You can find me at Kendra Knows Best. You can find me on TikTok at Kendra Knows Best. You can find me at Instagram at Kendra Knows Best. Or you can track my team on Instagram at Team Onyx, O-N-Y-X 1000. We're on Instagram. You can email me info for Kendra L. Willis at gmail.com. Or you can always find me where you find Coach Deidre. She will send you my way. Thank you for having me. I love this group. I love your listeners. And keep those questions coming because me and Coach Deidre, we're going to bring it to you, okay? So thank you for having me, Coach.
See ya. See you later. Get out of here, right, Queen. Have a great weekend.
Okay. All right. You too. Bye-bye now.
So I guess that wraps it up for me today. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We can stay connected on my social media outlets, my Facebook page, If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes Life Coaching, my Instagram page, at Coach Deidre, and past podcasts can be heard on CoachDeidre.com. So I'll be back with a new show Friday, March 6th at noon on the one and only Inner Light Radio. I hope you'll tune in again. Until then, I hope you'll be doing more than paying bills and waiting to die. Go live. This is Deidre, your life coach, reminding you, if you want to make a change in your life, do it. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.